This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Maverick Californian Republican Pete McCloskey's bio sounds like a page from history, and it is. He graduated from high school the year World War II ended. A highly decorated U.S. Marine, McCloskey led bayonet charges in the Korean War. He joined the U.S. Congress in 1967, tangled with Richard Nixon over the war in Vietnam, retired years ago to grow oranges in California. Now McCloskey's coming back to confront a Republican Party, his party, that he says has gone dangerously wrong. At 78, he's challenging Tom DeLay buddy Richard Pombo for Pombo's seat in Congress. Pombo's people say Pete McCloskey is stuck in the 70s like Austin Powers. McCloskey says the GOP is in crisis. Up next on Point, candidate Pete McCloskey. Joining me now from Sacramento, California is Pete McCloskey. Mr. McCloskey, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, good to have you. Welcome.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. McCloskey.
Pete McCloskey, you have said you're running against Congressman Richard Pombo. We'll talk about that, but you've got a bigger critique about the Republican Party itself. Pombo's people say you were never part of the Republican mainstream, and now you're not even part of the American mainstream. So what's your critique?
Well, I think they're right when they say I'm back in the 70s. In the 70s, we had honorable Republicans. We had Jerry Ford and Barry Goldwater and Bob Dole and George Bush, the elder, who stood for integrity and honesty. All of them wanted fiscal responsibility, were working towards balanced budgets, and above all else, they were ethical people. Today, the House of Representatives has fallen on hard times. The Republican leadership obviously tried to prevent any further investigation at Tom DeLay a year ago. That caused a group of us, all on Social Security, to form a group called the Revolt of the Elders to try to get those ethics rules changed back so that the Republican Party wouldn't look to the country like it was in the hands of the big lobbyists. The K Street Project, which brought all of this money into the Republican Party, carried with it obligations which you're now beginning to see turn into criminal indictments. DeLay has been indicted. Duke Cunningham has pled guilty to taking $2.4 million in bribes. People like Pombo and Doolittle have taken huge sums of money from Jack Abramoff, the lobbyist who's admitted that he tried to bribe members of Congress. This isn't the Republican Party that we knew when it was an honorable party. And I think if we don't change it, the Republican Party is going to go the way it did after Watergate when Richard Nixon and the group around him, that creep committee, committed those various violations. A lot of my friends went to jail at that time. John Ehrlichman had been my debate partner at Stanford Law School. He later said that 3.5 years in the White House had caused them to become corrupted by the power. I think that this Republican leadership of the House today has been corrupted by the power, particularly the DeLay and the Pombos and the Doolittles that represent its leadership.
You said you're not just angry, you're outraged, and that the Republican Party is becoming a danger to the nation. Is that hyperbole?
Well, let me put it on a practical basis. I would say that the greatest asset of our country is not necessarily our armed forces and the Marine Corps. It's the faith of the people that the government, the politicians that lead us are honest, that they're not on the take, that they're not taking money from lobbyists, that our laws are made after due consideration with civil discourse between Republicans and Democrats. That isn't happening. And I think the faith of the people is being lost in what they see coming out of the Beltway today in Washington.
Isn't there something to the Republican pushback? This is, again, from Pombo's people. They're in the press saying, you know, Pete McCloskey is like Austin Powers. He's stuck in the 70s. He wasn't mainstream Republican then. He's not now. I mean, you were challenging Richard Nixon when he was Republican president. You were very strong on the environment before that was a big Republican issue. You ran for the Senate in 82, didn't make it through the primary then, but you disagreed with President Ronald Reagan on abortion, gun control, nuclear strategy, El Salvador. So were you really a Republican?
Well, I was a Republican in 1948 when I became 21. I registered Republican. My great-grandfather and grandfather were both on the Merced County Central Committee in 1890. My father made one political speech in his life. He said, I was born a Republican and I'll live and die a Republican. And I don't think that the Republican Party should push aside people that express differing views. John McCain today is my idea of a Republican. I suppose he's a maverick, but he got the Senate to vote 90-9 to end torture, to try to force the Bush administration to end torture. He's trying to control lobbying. He's trying to restore ethics to the political process. Sure, he's a maverick. The mainstream Republicans are probably scared to death of him because they take that money. They're taking those free trips. They're enriching their families with campaign funds. This fellow Pombo paid his family over $500,000 out of campaign funds in elections where he really had no opposition. This kind of Republican Party can stand a little disagreement from people like John McCain and Susan Collins and Lincoln Chafee and Olympia Snow and Chuck Hagel. There's some good Republicans out there that are fighting what has become the habit and the custom of so many Republicans in the House to live off these free trips paid for by foundations or private companies. It looks from the outside, as from outside the Beltway, I'm saying, as if the country is run by lobbyists now, with their money and concentration on congressional representatives. They raise all of this money. The Republicans have a fund to keep the Republican majority. They don't want to deal with lobbying firms that hire Democrats. This is not good for the country.
But leave aside the lobbyists for a moment. And it's a big point, and we see it. But on policy, I mean, President Bush opposes lots of stem cell research. You support it. You're for abortion rights. You're calling for the U.S. to have called for the U.S. to pull its troops out of Iraq within a year. You supported John Kerry in 2004. Are the voters in this district in California, the Republican voters in a primary, going to stand up and vote for someone whose positions are so far from President Bush's, let's say?
Well, I don't know. I will see. We've got 4 months of the campaign left before the voters cast their ballots on June the 6th. You remember, it took a year before the public finally believed that there was no connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. It took a year before public opinion accepted the fact that there were no weapons of mass destruction, things that Bush had proposed as the reasons for going into Iraq. The young Marines that I talked to down at Camp Pendleton are universal in their pride of fighting for the United States' position in Iraq. They're also almost unanimous that there's going to be a civil war when we pull out of Iraq. And it's beginning to reach the point, as Jack Murtha said, that the lives and the bodies of these young men who are getting terribly wounded, how many do we have to lose before we leave Iraq to be run by Iraqis? I don't think we've ever succeeded, nor has any nation succeeded as an occupying power since the British occupied India. Occupiers are not beloved of people. And I think that the idea that after 3 years we still have to stay in Iraq, I think there should be a deadline for pulling out of Iraq, because Iraqis are going to run their country ultimately, and if they have a civil war, that's their choice. We can't change that.
Pete McCloskey, 7-term Republican congressman from California, now at 78 years of age, putting his hat back in the ring, running against incumbent since 1992, Richard Pombo. Jack Beattie, Pete McCloskey says he's in a battle for the soul of the Republican Party. What do you see, what do you hear in this old warrior?
Well, it seems to me he's got a lot of allies within the party. It was overlooked at the time, but a poll conducted by the New York Times during the 2000 Republican convention found that by about 80% of the delegates were for strong environmental regulations. Nearly 75% were even willing to accept fewer jobs and lower economic growth in exchange for more environmental protection. The Republican Party, in other words, at its base, was overwhelmingly pro-environment. And yet, President Bush received an F rating from an environmental group that gave John Kerry, that gave Bill Clinton, a C-. So it's a credible group. And it seems to me Congressman McCloskey is speaking to those voters who really have been ignored. A kind of government by campaign contribution, at least in the environmental realm, has taken the place of what has been this longtime Republican support for environmentalism.
Pete McCloskey, how about, again, the Pombos people say, this is just peak. You wrote the Endangered Species Act, so you're upset that the Congressman Pombo is messing with it. What's your big take on this administration and the environment?
Well, I think there's no secret. In the 5 years of the Bush administration, they've tried to roll back all of the environmental processes and laws that were adopted back in the 70s that remained with bipartisan support until 1994 when Newt Gingrich became the speaker, but when Bush became president, and putting his reliance on people like DeLay and Pombo, and DeLay put Pombo in his position as chairman of the House Resources Committee. Pombo wants to sell 15 national parks. He tried to give away some 600,000 acres of mining claims here in California to give to the mining companies to develop as they wish. He believes in privatizing the remaining public lands. You remember back in 2004, he sent out a brochure at taxpayer expense to the snowmobile operators in two key states, urging that this administration wanted snowmobiles in Yellowstone and Yosemite and that recreation was the key to the national parks. He wanted to give away Roosevelt Island, the father of Republican environmentalism, if not national environmentalism, with Theodore Roosevelt. He's got an island out there right across from Watergate and the Potomac River. Pombo wants to develop that for housing. That kind of philosophy shared by the Bush administration, I think, is repugnant to most Americans who value the quality of living, the preservation of the wilderness.
Greg's calling from Lansing, Michigan. Hi, Greg. You're on the air.
Thank you. Pete, Greg from Sunnyvale City Council. Good to hear your voice again.
It's been a while.
It has been a very long time. I am driving through a snowstorm in Michigan, and I called because I wanted you to know that Pete, when he served in Congress, and I was in his district many years ago, repeatedly demonstrated exactly what it is he talks about, the sort of suicidal approach to running for office that some people see, I think really exhibits an honesty that we could all much better benefit from if other people subscribe to it. Let me give you an example. I went to a Jesuit law school in California.
Yeah.
He made an appearance there when he was running for office. There was a Q&A session after the presentation. Pete answered a bunch of questions. Finally, there were no more questions, and Pete said, you know, nobody here has asked me about abortion. Well, you know, nobody raised that question at a Catholic university, but Pete did because he felt it needed to be talked about.
The question everybody wants to duck. But let me ask you, Greg, you've known Pete McCloskey for a long time. Is he in the wrong party? The Republicans or Pombo's people say he's a stalking horse for the Democrats. Should he be running in the Democratic Party? He supported John Kerry.
You know, I once asked Pete what the difference was between being a Republican and being a Democrat, and he said the Democrats are the party of the people. I said, all right, well, then what are the Republicans? He said, well, the Republicans are the party of the individual. And I'll leave it up to Pete to explain to you what the difference is.
Pete, you've got an old supporter here from years back on the road in Lansing, and he's still saying, go, man, go.
I remember him well. He made his living as a police officer before he went to law school, which takes a little courage, but the Republican Party used to be the party that said government is inherently incompetent. Let's keep it out of interfering with people's choice, whether it was in the bedroom or in the business arena. Mm. And you guys keep mentioning my age. You know, Ben Franklin, when we created this revolt of the elders last year, when the Republican leadership tried to prevent DeLay from being prosecuted, we got a whole bunch of Republican congressmen from the 70s in the 80s, and we were offended by this change. And we took our cue from Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin was 82 years old in the Constitutional Convention, Philadelphia, 1787.
Mm-hmm.
He made perhaps the crucial speech. He got up on the last day of the convention. He said, the older I grow, the more apt I am to doubt my own judgment and to change my views when I get better and fuller information. Therefore, I ask you, gentlemen, that this Constitution, with all of its faults, let's adopt it because we are likely not to get a better one. Now, that speech at 82 affected the members of Congress who were the same age as most of the colleagues here today. And I think older people can affect public policy. And if the younger people aren't going to step forward and return to honesty and ethics, perhaps we can remind them that there was a time once when the Republican Party was an honest policy, worked for fiscal responsibility, worked for honesty, and didn't accept money from lobbyists to affect their votes on issues.
Pete, don't accuse us of ageism here. We simply note it because you had such a long career many years ago, and coming back into the fray at that age, you got to admit, people tend to stay in Congress a long time, but not to come back to it when they're 78. I know you say George Bush parachuted out of an airplane when he was 80, and Paul Newman, we've seen him in his race car. We take your point on Ben Franklin. It's just a little unusual.
I know, but those three are great men. George Bush Sr., I think, was one of the great gentlemen. I think in history he'll be recognized as a great president. Paul Newman, you know, was a tail gunner at the end of World War II. These people have something to add still. I wish I could get George Bush Sr. to speak out on his views. He's loyal to his son, and I respect that, but if you talk to Brent Scowcroft or see what Brent Scowcroft has been saying lately, there's got to be a little disagreement with what George Bush is doing today, the new president. And I think old people ought to have a voice. We're taking the beating on this recent Medicare bill and Medicaid, and we're taking it because after the bills were enacted in the houses, the lobbyists got into the conferences and got provisions put into that Medicare and Medicaid bill, which benefited the health industry, but certainly doesn't benefit old people. And there's a lot of us around here, and I'm hoping we can turn out and perhaps set a new standard for Republican honesty.
Pete McCloskey, mad as hell, not going to take it anymore. Greg and Lansing, stay on the road. Leo is calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Leo. You're on the air.
Hi, it's my pleasure. Mr. McCloskey, it's my pleasure to speak with you, sir. I'm just wondering, sir, if there hasn't been a basic shift in the electoral paradigm where the people are no longer supporting the same things they supported in the 60s and 70s. I mean, Medicare is a great example of something where you guys created a bureaucracy that sucks up 75 cents of every dollar out of that system gets without paying for anybody's medical bills. And you basically were in your tenure comes from a time when the Republicans hadn't won the Congress for 40 years. And there's been a basic shift. I don't think that those viewpoints represent what the people are anymore. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts on that are.
Pete McCloskey.
Well, you may be right, but I remember one of the greatest members of Congress of our time was Barbara Conable, who came from a district right next to Buffalo, New York. And there was an honest man who people respected on both sides of the aisle. Yes, we recognize that Medicaid program. I remember when Nixon came into office, I was in the transition team for HEW. Wilbur Cohen, who had been the secretary, they just passed Medicare, and he came before the transition team with a big grin, and he says, you know, we thought Medicare was going to cost $3 billion. It's cost $11 billion this year, and it could bankrupt this country. And he gave a big smile and walked off, and the Nixon administration then took over to try to cope with that. But this recent Medicaid bill is an outrage. I mean, to have the lobbyists put these provisions in that were not considered by either house, put in at a conference, the earmarks, which John McCain is trying to break, the earmarks where individual congressmen sneak in these provisions that pass pork out to their own districts that are never voted on before this by the members of the House and Senate. The whole legislative process has broken down under the Republican leadership in the House. You mention the Democrats. It's true. I was in the House for 15 years when the Democrats had a majority. I remember the saying was, few die and none retire. Mm-hmm. In that 15 years, as I recall, we had some 35 congressmen indicted. 34 of them were Democrats. They had the power. Now the Republicans have had the power for 12 years, 13 years since 1994. I think it's time that we recognize the Republicans have abused the power. I think we have to get the Republican leadership that has been most abusive, the DeLays, the Pombos, the Doolittles, the people that got so much money from Jack Abramoff. I think they have to be taken out of the Congress if the Republican Party is to be returned to a balanced participant in the American political process. And to have faith in the Republican Party seems to me worthy of a kind of John McCain, McCloskey-type maverick approach.
Leo in Buffalo, thanks for your call. Jack Beatty, think back with us for a minute here. This is not the first time that Pete McCloskey has raised his voice from the ranks of the Republican Party outside the mainstream, at least, of the people sitting on Capitol Hill. He did it in 1972, opposed Richard Nixon on the Vietnam War, talked about impeachment of Nixon very early on, talked about repealing the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. I mean, that was maverick quality way back when.
It sure was, and I as a young man, I remember sending you a campaign contribution, which I look upon as one of my best investments. I remember back then reading an article by J.H. Plum, the British historian. He was writing about Sir Robert Walpole, the corrupt 18th century British minister, and about corruption in politics and how doing the favors of the rich and so on. But then he said there's another kind of corruption, a worse kind. He called it corruption of the spirit. And he said you see it in congressmen who vote year after year for appropriations for a war they don't believe in and that they only vote for to save their own political skins. And I was reminded of that recently looking at this Paul Pillar piece. He's the intelligence, CIA Mideast intelligence man who wrote a piece in Foreign Affairs. And in this piece, he says this shocking thing that the Congress asked for a national intelligence estimate on Iraq's weapons, and it was held, and congressmen and senators could see it in a closed room. Mm-hmm. And according to several congressional aides, no more than six senators read the document, read more than the five-page executive summary. And then they went out and voted for a war, citing this, what was already a cooked document, and not yet not even reading it. Would you give your comment on that kind of corruption, Mr. McCloskey?
Pete McCloskey.
Well, you know, you're speaking from Hanover, New Hampshire, and right next to you is the state of Vermont, which has always furnished us some of our best senators, either Jim Jeffords or Pat Leahy. They rate right up in the top members of the Senate. And I remember old George Aiken, who must have been close to 78, when he said early on in the Vietnam War, why don't we just say we won and go home? And that wisdom coming out of the rock-bound state of Vermont and the Granite State, to live free or die, New Hampshire, that kind of wisdom I think should permeate the current Senate. I wish it would. I wish they'd read the intelligence reports. I wish they'd contemplate whether we're winning or losing the hearts and minds of people in the Muslim world by trying to occupy an Arab country for more than 3 years. As I say, I think the Beltway needs an infusion of people from outside the Beltway because they've sat in there too long and they listen to each other and themselves and the pundits that speak out of Washington, and they're getting separated from the people and what the people would like. We would like a peaceful country. We would like a prosperous country. I don't think we want the horrendous deficits. To make these tax cuts permanent, $1 trillion of deficit that go with it, I think we're living high on the hog at a time when we ought to be tightening our belts and preparing for the future. The environment isn't just an environmental issue. We have the worst health in this district that I'm running in. We have polluted water. We have one of the dirtiest airs in the United States. Protecting the environment is protecting people's health. One kid out of six now in San Joaquin County is getting asthma. This is a health problem, the environment. We've got to restrain, I think, this urban sprawl across the landscape, the tremendous emissions. Mr. Pombo doesn't believe that there is global warming, and he certainly doesn't believe that air emissions are contributing to global warming. That's an awfully short-sighted view. It's easy for the politicians to take the money from the oil companies and the coal companies and the timber companies and vote for prosperity, but I think it's a short-sighted view. It's one of the problems or one of the privileges of democracy that we can turn these guys out once in a while.
We've invited Congressman Pombo on before to talk about the environment, and we will invite him on again. But today we're hearing from Pete McCloskey, 78 years old, former seven-term congressman. Now he's back challenging Richard Pombo for a seat in the Congress, and he is back at it. Tom's calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. Pete, this is Tom Lowenstein, Al Lowenstein's middle kid. And I'm just calling in to say hi and to thank you for what you're doing. I think if there's one lesson from my father's political life, it's that sometimes you have to stand up against your own party because some things are much bigger than party. And I think on the issues that you're talking about, corruption and handling of the war in Iraq and the environment, this Republican administration seems to me to have gone against all its own basic principles. And I think you're standing up against that, and that's bigger than party. And I just wanted to say thank you for doing that.
Well, Tom, your father was one of the great men of American politics. I remember we were sitting in a—
This is the Democratic congressman, Al Lowenstein. Yeah, excuse me.
Yeah, Al Lowenstein was killed by a nut. But Al and I were sitting in a New Hampshire motel, I think with Dave Broder and Lou Cannon once, and both of our candidates were losing. George Bush, my candidate, was going to lose. Whoever Al was working for, McGovern or Muskie, was going to lose. And I said to Al, well, don't be despairing. Every time a man speaks out against oppression or injustice, a little ripple of hope goes out, and from a million centers of daring, those ripples can build up a wall that sweeps down the mightiest walls of oppression. And Al said, yeah, I wrote that for Bobby Kennedy. It was a speech he gave at Cape Town, in Africa in 1966. Al Lowenstein was, as I say, probably one of the greatest congressmen I ever knew.
Tom, let me ask you. Your father was right there with Pete McCloskey, but he was a Democrat. Do you see Pete as a Republican, or should he come on over to the Dems?
I think it's important to have dissent within your own party. I mean, again, Pete has already said something that I disagree with, which is that George H.W. Bush is one of the great presidents of all time. We don't agree on everything, but that's not the point. I mean, when my father saw that the Vietnam War was out of control and that a Democratic president was pushing us towards it, he stood up against that president within his own party. And so this notion that the modern Bushies have sort of evolved somehow, that to be against the president, to stand up against the president, is somehow unpatriotic and against your own party. Some things, as I said, are bigger than party, and my father understood that, and I think that's why he and Pete were friends. And I think that that's what Pete's doing today, and I think it's a wonderful thing.
Tom Lowenstein, son of Long Island Congressman Al Lowenstein. Thanks very much for calling in. Pete McCloskey, let me ask you. You say you're out to save the soul of the Republican Party. What do you think happened here? You've been an outrider for a long time, but now you say it's way off center. What's your interpretation of what happened? Is it as simple as getting power and power corrupts, or something else here?
I think... I've taught at Stanford and Santa Clara law schools, legal ethics for 3 years. I taught political science at Stanford for one and Santa Clara for six. I think if there is one inexorable rule of political science, it's that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That was said by Lord Acton back in 1874. I've taught it in every political science class I've ever taught. And I think you're seeing today that's what's happened to the Republican Party. It has gotten the power in the House and in the Senate. I don't know that it's been corrupted in the Senate, but it's sure been corrupted in the House. And this is not all Republicans in the House. There's some excellent members of the Congress. Chris Shays, Jim Leach of Iowa. Chris Shays is from Connecticut. Olympia Snow from Maine. Chris Bollert from New York. Wayne Gilchrist from Maryland. There's some Republicans that have stood up to the House leadership. There's about one in nine, I think, of 230 Republicans, some 28 of them stood up against their party leadership and were threatened with retribution because they stood up against the leadership. If there's one thing I think that perhaps differentiates me from where I'm a Republican and rather a Democrat, I don't believe in any philosophy that you vote for the Republicans from the state out to the courthouse. I think most Republicans will vote for a Democrat when the Democrat is a better candidate. You'd like to think Democrats will vote for the Republican when he's better than the Democratic candidate.
Do you think that's still true? Is that true today?
I don't know, but I'll tell you, it's not healthy for the parties to have power too long. There needs to be a pendulum swinging back and forth.
Jay's calling from Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Jay. You're on the air.
Thank you. I first wanted just to say that I'm traditionally a registered Democrat, but what I'd like to seek in leadership is the right candidate, similar to what Pete just mentioned, and someone that has integrity and honesty and is just going to make the right decisions for the country. And I will vote for Republican or Democrats, and I think there's a sore need in the country to get back to that type of civility and that type of decency. And I think that Pete McCloskey represents what I would characterize as someone who's searching for the truth, the right decisions for our country, and real leadership, in my opinion. And my question to Mr. McCloskey is, the issues seem to be so outrageous when it comes to the environment, when it comes to the Iraq war intervention, to our fiscal issues, the lobbyist issues. Why has the Republican Party been so slow to respond or to express some outrage or some need for reform here?
Jay, let us put that to the ex-congressman.
Well, I wish I knew. Let me give you an example where the president has just claimed that whatever the Congress may tell him are the limitations on spying, in an emergency, he is going to ignore what Congress has said. Foreign Surveillance Act that we passed in 1978, it said, look, if you're in an emergency, you can go to the court 3 days afterwards. You can wiretap now and get a permit later. The president says, I'm not going to abide by that. Well, it's been the law of this country for 200 years that even during a war, when Congress passes a law that restricts or defines a president's power, he doesn't go beyond that. Now you've got a president contending that whatever Congress says, I'm going to do it anyway, whether it's torture or wiretapping. And I think the Republicans in the Senate ought to stand up to this. And I think there is sort of a general tendency to go along with your president in time of war, not to indicate disagreement. But I think that the Senate and the House are deliberative bodies or legislative bodies. The Constitution placed Congress first and the president second, and the president ought to listen to Congress. But if Congress doesn't exercise its oversight power, doesn't demand hearings, things like on Katrina, where Senator Collins of Maine had the courage to say, let's have a discussion and an oversight on Katrina. There ought to be a discussion on this oversight and this wiretapping. There ought to be a discussion on the leak of the identity of a CIA agent. But you've seen the Republicans in the House decline to go forward for fear of political concern. And that means the Congress isn't doing its job. And if it takes old people to come back to the Congress to try to make it do its job, that seems a worthwhile reason. I can't remember a generation like mine, born in 1926, 27, too young to get killed in World War II, but old enough to get the privilege of the GI Bill. We've had the finest living conditions in the history of the world in the last 75 years, and I don't see any reason why old people shouldn't get back into the fight and try to tell the youngers and the politicians that, hey, let's change our thinking, let's go back to honesty, let's go back to a balanced budget, let's go back to a balance between the economy and the environment. That's what I hope to do. Now, I don't have any idea what's going to happen out here in this district in California, but we're going to give them a fight.
But, Pete, Jay's asking, why haven't more Republicans turned to this attitude? I mean, you said absolute power corrupts absolutely, whether Republican or Democrat. We hear that. And yet, it's not just about the power. I mean, after all, you know, they didn't get this power by accident. They were elected repeatedly. Americans have put this Republican majority in power and kept it there now for more than a decade, as you say. So what's going on? Take us deeper inside here.
I think what's happened is that there's been a general apathy. People think I can't affect it, so I'll go along with the system. I may not vote. I think the percentage of Americans has dropped, voting has dropped to the lowest in history. More people vote in Iraq percentage-wise than those that are qualified to vote. I think there is a sort of a general feeling they're all crooks. I run into this out here all the time. I say, hey, do you want a crook for your congressman? They say, well, he's our crook, and aren't they all crooked back in Washington? Well, they have a point. That, I think, is a general public view across this country, that politics is a dirty business. No politician should be trusted, and so we don't participate in the system anymore. We go along with it. And if we can stir people up into demanding excellence and honesty, that's worth doing. And if we older people have to lead the way, that's worth doing, too.
Jay in Columbus, thanks very much for your call. Let's take a call from San Jose, California, closer to McCloskey country. Paul's on the line. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi. Nice to talk to you, Mr. McCloskey. I wanted to ask you, if you were elected, how would you manage the Republican Party's surrender to faith and to militarism, which in my opinion is basically cynical?
Well, I'll tell you, I was on a ship going to Korea with the Reverend Pat Robertson. All the way over, he kept saying, my daddy's a senator. I'm not going into combat with you guys. And indeed, he didn't go into combat, although he later said he did. The difference in the Republican Party today is that George Bush was glad to put Pat Robertson and that religious fundamentalism to one side. Robertson now sits at the side of George Bush Jr. In these pictures they take out of Washington. Well, Robertson's a kook. I mean, he dodged combat when he was young. He was a liquor officer for the 1st Marine Division when he finally reached Korea after the Russians had asked for a peace. Didn't he call for the other day for the assassination of the duly elected president of Venezuela?
Yes.
Didn't he say that something about Sharon should be stricken down by God because he was dividing the Holy Land of Israel? That man and the religious zealots, as Jack Danforth, a former senator from Missouri, said the other day, they've hijacked the Republican Party.
But they didn't do it alone. You're talking about millions of Americans there. I mean, maybe it's you that's out of step, Pete McCloskey.
Well, if I'm out of step, I'm happily out of step, and I'll be glad to be a maverick like John McCain and keep arguing for a return to honesty and ethics in the Republican Party. The Republican Party wasn't always unethical. I go back to Jerry Ford and Barry Goldwater and Bob Dole. Those three men were of impeccable honesty. We don't have leaders like that, except, I think, for McCain and those few from that I've mentioned earlier, Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. Good men, but bowing to majority pressure. Let's get the money rolling in. Let's get reelected as a majority. And if we vote with the lobbyists, so be it. We're returned to power. Power has corrupted the Republican Party, and And I think it's time to give it a jock or a jog. Jog.
A jog and a pretty good one. Jack Beattie, you're listening along here. How do you hear this? Do you hear fertile ground in the GOP faithful for a McCloskey kind of candidacy, or is this fallow ground for the kind of seed he's trying to put in?
Well, as I said before, I mean, if you look at some of the issues, Republicans are much more moderate than one would guess from the caricatures in the press, certainly on the environment, but also on things like spending. There's a strong feeling among Republicans in all polls I've seen for more budget discipline. And for reducing the deficit. There's strong feelings about the trade, about all sorts of economic issues there. So in a strange way, what has happened, I think, to the Republicans is that money has corrupted them in Pete's sense. That is, you know, so long as we don't have full funding, full public funding of congressional elections and free time mandated on television, we're going to keep getting money, government by campaign contribution. It happened to the Republicans. They came in as the Reform Party in 94. Mm. They were against the Democrats' corruption. They knocked out, you know, representative after representative who was implicated in the check-kiting scandals and other things. They were going to hold the torch of reform. And look what happened. They built the ramparts of money around them to protect them, to protect their incumbency. They became a party of incumbency, just as the Democrats did. Unless you cut that Gordian knot to full funding for congressional campaigns, this is just going to keep happening again and again.
Pete McCloskey, you ready to go that far, full public funding?
Yeah, I'm moving toward it. I think it's cheaper for the American public to fund congressional elections than to have lobbyists and big money fund it. One of the things about the Republican Party, the rich get richer and the middle class get poorer in comparison. These permanent tax cuts, the ending of the estate tax, it's a philosophy that if somehow you reduce the taxes on the rich, they will put more money into job creation and business and entrepreneurship, and that's true. But I don't think the Republican Party should stand for reducing taxes on the rich. I remember Daniel Webster in 1820 addressed the famous Plymouth Oration. He said, you know, we're lucky in New England because none of us had any property to start with, and we share equally now. And if the rich get richer, and it is perceived by the poor that only the rich govern the country, the poor will rise up in rebellion against the rich. And I think some of these Republican policies and tax policies today are leading us in that direction. The estate tax, for example, sure, there ought to be a huge exemption for family farmers and family businesses. But the idea that money can be passed on from the richest people in the world to their children without an estate tax, I think runs counter to what would have been the Republican policies under Teddy Roosevelt or Dwight Eisenhower or Gerry Ford.
Pete McCloskey, I read that you've put up something like half of your life savings at age 78 to run this campaign. That's a kind of vote in itself.
Well, we didn't have any money to start with, and we've started raising money. People are starting to send into our website. We have a website, PeteMcCloskey.com, on which people now can send in money. And I'd like to get a whole bunch of $10 contributions. This other guy starts with $1.5 million. We start with zero. But I think we could match him if the people that believe in the environment having a balance, the people that believe in honesty and ethics return to the Congress, send in $10 each, maybe we can match him.
Gloria is calling from Leslie, Michigan. Hi, Gloria. You're on the air.
Hi. Oh, Pete. Thank you so much for coming back and saying what you're saying. I'm just hoping that you've come back to save our country and not just the Republican Party, because they have really turned me off. I think that they're destroying our country.
There's a thumbs up from Leslie. But, Gloria, do you think it's a winning message nationally, or is the Republican majority, perhaps yourself, or maybe you, your neighbors, on a different track?
Well, that's the part I don't understand. I don't think I'm overly intelligent to see what's happening, but our nation is going down the drain. All over the world, we're disliked very much, and I can understand why.
There's a welcome mat for Pete. Hello, Pete McCloskey.
I think one of the reasons we're disliked is the appearance of arrogance, that we're the bully around the world, that we tell everybody else what they should do and what kind of democracy they should have. When Condi Rice says we want democracy in the Mideast, but if they elect a person down in Bolivia or Chile or Venezuela that we don't like, then we try to send the CIA to affect their voting processes. That's not perceived by the rest of the world as being fair. My son is a prosecutor at The Hague, the World Court. He's prosecuting Serbian generals who killed 8,000 or 9,000 people. He says, Dad, you know, they used to dislike us in many ways because we're richer than they. But now many, many people, where he is in The Hague and in Europe, now they hate us. And it's that arrogance that somehow the United States is good for the world and therefore we impose what we want at the barrel of a gun or by offering money to people that we want to do what we want to do. I go back to the first George Bush, who said he'd like a kinder and gentler America. And I think it's time, not that we withdraw from world affairs, but we stop displaying the arrogance, the belligerence that has been shown recently.
Frank Saporetto is calling from Derry, New Hampshire. Is that the former Republican state senator there, Mr. Saporetto?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Thank you. And I want to thank, it's an honor to speak with you, Congressman. And also, I think you're bringing up some tremendous points that need to be addressed in the New Hampshire primary about what the Republican Party stands for. I was defeated in a re-election by an opponent who pushed for group rights over individual rights, and it seemed that I was being called a rhino. So, you know, I think that your discussion about this and what we stand for in the party of the individual is critical to shape the debate coming up in the New Hampshire primary. And I commend you for bringing that up, and I hope that you continue to push it and wish complete success in your election.
Frank, you were called a rhino. That is not a real Republican.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know,
up here we call them rhinos.
Yep. The great thing about New Hampshire is, you know, live free or die is still a pretty good I think they still have it on their license plates up there. And I kind of agree with Nathan Hale. You know, what did he say? I regret I have but one life to live for my country. And that's sort of a New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine attitude toward the world. And I wish it would spread out here to California.
Frank, thanks very much for your call. Sam's calling from Lincoln, Massachusetts. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's an honor to speak with you. I'm old enough to remember the Vietnam War, and it's a shock to me to see the whole history repeated all over again with the war in Iraq. And I think there are a lot of Americans who think that impeachment is in order, and one of those Americans is one of your fellow colleagues, it might be, John Conyers from Michigan, who's put up a bill before the House to suggest that maybe there should be an investigation to see whether grounds for impeachment are in order. And I was wondering what you think about looking into an impeachment of our sitting president.
Pete McCloskey.
Well, I love John Conyers. I remember when the Nixon administration, when he spoke out against the war, they said they had that secret thing, you know, on the enemies list, and they said, John has a weakness for white women. And John came back and said, yeah, I got a weakness for black women, too. I'm not at the impeachment stage. I think impeachment would be a distraction at the present time. I'd rather see the Congress talk about regaining the power of Congress and things like foreign surveillance and torture, to pull back the president's horns a little in some of the policies that he's making, but not through his impeachment. Impeachment is a terribly distracting policy, and I think the country, you know, we've gone through it twice now, both Clinton and Nixon. I remember those years in the Nixon administration. I made the first speech for impeachment, but I would hate to see it happen now. I'd rather challenge the president's policies and his attitude toward the Congress and the law than talk about impeachment.
Pete McCloskey, we've just got half a minute here. Is your phone ringing from Republicans elsewhere around the country, or are you getting, you know, the back of their hand?
Well, we just opened that PeteMcCloskey.com, and I think that something like $20,000 has come in already, and I hope it'll continue. I think there are a lot of people that rebel against the current Republican leadership in the House of Representatives that side with the John McCains of this world and the Olympia Snows. I hope so. We'll see in this election. That's what this election's all about, is what kind of Republican's going to win, a guy that's enriched his family and wants to give away the public lands of the United States, or an old guy who's coming back in. I pledged I wouldn't serve more than 2 years. I've said if I'm elected, let's tag congressional salaries to the budget. If there's a 2% deficit 1 year, 2% cut in congressional salaries. We get a surplus, give us a bonus of 1%.
That'll get their attention.
My former colleagues will probably love me for that one, but I think that's a great incentive to get back to balanced budgets.
Mr. McCloskey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Pete McCloskey joining us from Sacramento. He's running again for Congress in the 11th District in California. Jack Beatty, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.